everybody, and welcome to True Stories of Tinseltown. And today, oh boy, what a guest. I am so thrilled. I reached out to Jessica, and she has kindly called me. And this Jessica is Jessica Rains, and she is the daughter of one of my dreamboat, I call them DDBs, Jessica, dead dreamboats, Claude Rains. I love, well, yes, he's a DDB to me. He'll always be my DDB. But I have a couple other DDBs, but I am thrilled, and I loved Claude Rains, and I am so happy to have you here. Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you.
So you were born to your father with his fourth wife.
With right? A what?
You were your father's only daughter, only child, and
yes.
You were born with wife number four.
Oh, to his fourth wife.
Yes.
Yes.
And he stayed married to her the longest, 20 years.
He stayed married to her, yes, 20 years.
That's a long time. But they...
It is a long time.
Were they together? Well, you know, look at his record.
They were together. There was a very large age difference, 20 years.
Mm.
And my feeling is, I was 17 when they split up.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is that the age difference had a lot to do with the split up.
I'm sure. Yeah, because I read when he first met her, she was 18. So
right.
He must have been 38. And
right.
And then he married that other lady, the Beatrix. And she hounded him down, charging him with bigamy and the whole nine yards.
Yes.
And took all of his cash, pretty much.
But that was before my mother.
Yes. Beatrix.
Yeah.
She named your mother as a correspondent. What a nice
Beatrice,
girl.
Oh, God. Beatrix. Absent.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and she's the one who wanted to leave your father. I think she left him for another guy. I don't know. Anyway, so like I said, there's a lot of women who find your father incredibly attractive. I know when I tell some men this, they kind of give me a look like Claude Rains, and I say, excuse me, yes, Claude Rains. He's so cute. I just thought he was very handsome in that voice.
There was a website a couple of years ago that was totally run and visited by people who were crazy about my father. And somebody told me about it, and I logged onto it just to see what was going on. And it was a little creepy to them.
What do you mean? In what way?
Well,
he was alive?
They were all sexually attracted to him. And it's weird for a daughter to read about that.
I bet. Yeah. You know, I think he's dreamy, but, you know, I don't really imagine us having sex.
They were writing novels about him.
Oh, my
him.
God.
I mean, it was crazy. It was really crazy.
When was this? Just a few years ago?
So then, well, I can't remember. I did a book with David Scull called An Actor's
Great
Voice.
Great book. I read it. Wonderful book.
Which took 6 years to write.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long story. This website started before the book came out, and they obviously couldn't wait for the book to come out because they thought that we were going to talk about all the extramarital affairs that my father had, of which, as far as I know, there were none. So they were having delusions of
That's
whatever
bizarre.
About my father.
But,
and when the book came out... They were angry at me because they felt that I was protecting him and that I had not revealed anything about these romances all over town.
That's a weirdo
so
website.
Then the website dissolved, I guess, not long after that.
Yeah, because they were waiting to discuss all the juicy details
they
from
were
the
waiting,
book,
yeah.
Right? So that they could say,
yeah.
Oh, if only that yeah. were me, and I was having sex
yes.
with Claude Rains. That's so weird.
Oh, God.
It would have creeped me out, too. That's kind of very gross. So,
yes.
Did your father talk about a lot of his coworkers with you? Did you hear any of the scoops on that?
No. I mean, I've been doing a bunch of sort of appearances, if you want to call them that, this last year, because it's the 75th anniversary of when Casablanca came out. Mm-hmm. Over Thanksgiving, and a lot of sort of interesting invitations came my way. And instead of turning them down, which I usually do, I said, oh, what the hell? And we were flown to Morocco.
Cool.
For the anniversary there. We went to Key Largo, Florida. There's going to be one in April in... where are we going? North Carolina. I mean, it's weird, you know.
But it is. It's so, like people get up, you know, they get obsessed with this stuff.
Right. So people everywhere, people say to me, so when your father was making Casablanca, what did he tell you when he came home from the set? And I said, I have to say, I was 4 years old.
I don't recollect here.
Making this movie. What is he going to say to me? Oh, you can't imagine what Ingrid Bergman did today.
No. They're fun.
He didn't talk about it. And he never did talk about it.
But there's a funny thing. I'm sorry. I read that.
He and Humphrey.
Go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nope. You go on.
No, you go.
Okay. No, you go. You go. Oh, no. Okay.
He was good friends with Humphrey Bogart.
Yes, I read that.
He and Paul Henry did not like each other at all.
I love that part. That made me laugh.
And Monica Henry, who is Paul Henry's daughter, and I are friends mm-hmm. now, so it's very funny. We both know that our fathers didn't like each other, but we tend to stay away from the subject.
Well, I don't blame you, but it's so funny. Does she know?
I always say that when my father came home from work at night, and I was 4 years old, he didn't tell me who was doing what to whom and how the day went. He just said to me, eat your spinach. I mean, it was not, you know, anything about being an actor.
Of course not. You were a baby. You were a baby doll.
Right.
But I love the word. Did your father truly have a nickname for Paul Henry as Paul Hemorrhoid? That was in the book.
Paul Hemorrhoid.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true.
I love that.
Yes.
I laugh so hard. You know, because he was in three films.
I think that Paul Henry thought that my father was pompous. And my father was anything but pompous. But that English accent is that sort of British mm-hmm. accent is deceiving. And I guess it made him seem pompous to Paul Henry. And also, when my father was working, he stayed very much to himself. Concentrated on what he was doing and what he was supposed to be doing, and he didn't kind of hang out and play chess with everybody like apparently they did on the set of Casablanca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he also had worked with Paul on Now Voyager, which I agree with Betty Davis, because I thought he was just, Jerry was like a wimp, you know, I can't leave Isabel, you know, and then there's this wonderful Claude Rains Dr. Jackwith. You know, I agree with Betty Davis. That's who she belonged with, not that big old hemorrhoid wimp guy.
Right.
Yeah. So did their antagonism must have started there? You think?
I have no idea.
Yeah. And then they did one more.
I really don't know. And he didn't talk about it at great length. He didn't talk about anybody that he worked with at great length. I mean, I basically grew up on a farm in Pennsylvania, and he talked about when they were going to take the steer to market and when they were going to, you know, do whatever they did to the pigs and when they
killed
the cows.
How could you stand that?
You know, so,
I'd scream.
And why hadn't I gone to the chicken coop and gathered the eggs that day? And, you know, I mean, that was the conversation.
Yeah.
It wasn't about... Wasn't about acting or film people or
because he didn't seem he wasn't like the type who would you'd see him at a pool party wearing his like mankini, lounging at the beach.
I don't think so.
I could never see Claude Rains doing that.
So.
You know, he's just sort of you know, kind of they called him aloof, but he just was to himself. And I read that you used to stutter, and he had everybody sing in the house. when you were in Pennsylvania.
Yes, it was very funny. I mean, if you sing, you can't stutter.
Right.
So that was the whole thing, you know, and we'd be sitting at dinner and we had, there was a woman who was the cook in the house when I was growing up, and mm-hmm. she would come in and say, "Here are the peas." I mean, everybody had to sing.
So it's like your little operetta. I mean,
right.
Did you sing back? "I hate peas."
Of course, I had to. Are you kidding?
And you lost your stutter.
Right.
How long did that go on, the songs?
I don't remember. It was pretty quick. I mean, months, certainly.
Yeah.
But pretty quick.
Good. I also read that he didn't want you to have a Pennsylvanian accent as well.
No, so I ended up with a New York inflection. What are you going to do? I mean,
I know, but so you were in Pennsylvania. When people would ask you what your father did, you'd say he is a farmer, correct?
Yes.
But you
did.
Well,
I didn't. Yeah. I didn't say that because, I mean, I said it because that's what I thought.
Yeah, that's what you knew him as.
That was what I knew.
How long did you live in Hollywood when you were a kid?
Well, until I was 11. We went back and forth. He had the farm in Pennsylvania, and he had a house in Brentwood here mm-hmm. in California. And we went back and forth. And when he was making a film, we would be here, and I would be in one school. And then we would go there, and, you know, when he wasn't working.
How was that for you?
Twice. I don't know. I mean, it was fine. You know, it's fine. I had friends in both places, and I went to a sort of private actor type school here and a public school in Pennsylvania, and it was fine. And when I was 11, he said, "This is ridiculous, and my daughter has to be in one school and not two." So he sold the house in Brentwood, mm-hmm. and we were just on the farm in Pennsylvania. And then when he came to Hollywood, he would work. And then he would come right back.
I love the story that Bette Davis was hot for him. You would just be a baby, so you wouldn't know it. But he thought she was a man-eater, and I guess she scared him a little bit.
He took me to the set.
That's right. Your mother and you.
My mother.
I love that story. Yeah. I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, and they remained very good friends for a long time, and she used to come and stay on the farm for weeks. Whenever she had trouble with the husband, she would show up.
Which one? Gary Merrill?
When Bette Davis had, well, I know Gary Merrill, and then there was another one. I can't remember who it was.
How cool is that? So you got to know her.
I knew her very well. And at the end, after my father died, she and I became friends. She reached out to me. She called me to the set where she was working. And, you don't turn her down.
No, that's against the law. It's like murder.
Get the commander
and turning
and
down.
And I jumped, threw my eyes on and jumped in the car and went to visit her. And she left a drive on for me on the studio lot. And I went into where she was working, and they had a trailer set up actually in the studio indoors. And I was taken to meet her, and she said, "Come in and sit down." And I went and I sat down, and she shut the door and she said, "Now we're going to talk about your father." And for like an hour, she told stories about him.
And she really was fond of him. She really liked him.
Yeah, no, they were good friends. They were good friends.
Is that the time when she said, "You may leave"? She told you could go.
She said, no, that was another time when a woman by the name of Anne Etheridge was doing a book, mm-hmm. or wanted to do a book. And I called Betty, and I said, I got this woman who wants to do a book about Claude. Could you give us an hour, and I will bring her to meet you? And she said, yes, of course. And so we went to her hotel at Universal, and we sat down and talked, and there was a tape recorder. Ann said, do you mind if I tape you? And Betty said, no. So Ann turned the tape recorder on at Word for about an hour, and then Betty said, okay, turn the tape recorder off. Now we're really going to talk.
Was it good stuff?
But I don't remember what she said. I mean, I don't think it was anything crazy or. And then when it was over and we were sitting there and she said, now you may leave.
Oh, the queens. I love it. The other story that cracks me up.
So we left.
Of course. What are you going to do if she tells you to leave? She'll give you the look. But the other story of her that you went to, they told you, Joan Crawford, I don't know who she told, your mother, your father, to dress casually, wear jeans, and go to Christina's birthday party.
Yes.
So why don't you tell the story about that? That was funny.
Well, I didn't know Christina. I mean, I think that Joan Crawford was looking for some friends in the neighborhood for Christina. And so my mother had said, what should she wear? And Joan Crawford said, jeans and a T-shirt. So I arrived in jeans and a T-shirt, and Christina and a mate or something, I can't remember what she was, answered the door, and Christina was in a pinafore and a little dress and crinolines and Mary Jane shoes with little white socks and tassels on them, and oh, God. So anyway, Christina said, you have to come and meet my mother. So I said, okay. I didn't really know who her mother was.
Right.
I mean, I didn't mean any. It didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
I was a kid. Maybe 7 is my guess, that I was 7 years old. And there was Joan Crawford. I had no idea who she was or what she'd done. And she was lying on a chaise, and she had one person doing her fingernails and another person doing her toes. And she checked me out, and we had some difficult conversation, and then she said, okay, that's it, and off, and then that was it. And then we went, Christina took me to her, they had a swimming pool, and they had a house, a little house by the swimming pool that Christina called her playhouse. And we went inside, and it was little, like the size of a bathroom, of a large bathroom maybe, and on all the walls with these glass cases with the most beautiful dolls in them. And I played with dolls until I was 10 years old. So that to me, this was like, I thought, oh boy, now we're going to play. Now
Eureka.
We're going to have a good time. And Christina said, no, no, they're just to look at.
How horrible. Joan.
So that was the end of that.
And were there other kids at the party, or was it just you and her?
Well, yes, and yes, and but I don't remember, it was a long time ago, whether that time that I just told you about was on the same day as the party.
Oh, so you saw Christina a couple times.
A couple, but not more than that. My good friend was Susan Strasberg, who lived across the street with her father, Lee Strasberg, who was a great acting teacher.
I remember.
And later on in my life, I studied with him for 4 years.
How cool. And so I loved Susan Strasberg. I liked a lot. She did some really good work.
Yes. Yes,
and so she was your BFF. She was your really good friend.
So she, yes, yes.
And you guys stayed friends.
I used to go there for lunch, and she was very big on radio programs, and we would order stuff from Captain Midnight you sent away for a secret ring. And it always seemed like it was going to be a very big deal. And then when the ring came, it was kind of a disappointment. You know, with two rings we ordered. And when the rings came, they were kind of a disappointment.
Cheapos.
And Lee Strasberg used to stand at the table reading. He never sat down. And he read while we were eating. I don't know what all that was about.
How did that feel to you? You're just a little kid. You're chowing down. You're disappointed at your superpower ring.
I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, she was a good friend, and we
Her father stood and up, and that was life. You know.
So the father was weird.
Yeah.
I went home, and I said to my mother, he's so weird. You know, he stood.
Which is. It's like, geez, I guess that's one way, but... I love this story that I saw that I read in the book that your dad dressed in his Phantom of the Opera garb and took you guys,
yes,
a couple of you, trick-or-treating.
Got it from Universal.
Yes.
Yes, he got it from Universal. He called Universal, and he got the cape and the hat and the whole thing. And then my mother would drive us around in the station wagon, my father and me, and I had two friends, Mary Rowland Haight and Jan Decker. Her father was Albert Decker.
I know him.
Who was a well-known character actor, mm-hmm, who was blacklisted and then ended up doing sort of one-man readings and things in Europe. And we would drive, my mother would drive us to people's houses that we knew. And we were dressed as gremlins, and we would hide under my father's cape. And he would recite some long, boring poem.
Like, all right, Dad, I want the candy.
And then he would open the cape, and we would jump out and say, trick or treat. And then because they were friends of ours,
yeah,
we would go into the house, and the grown-ups would drink, and everybody got pretty sloshed
by
bet. The end of the evening.
Yeah. Did he stop doing at a certain door point, did he stop doing the long soliloquy and just say, give me a drink?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Where were you? Was that in L.A.?
That was here.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But there's another story that kind of it came to my mind. Have you seen the book that Noah Eisenberg wrote? It's the new one on Casablanca.
No, I have not seen.
And he's a teacher, I think the head of a department in New York, and he wrote a book about Casablanca. And I met him in Morocco.
How cool.
When we were just there over Thanksgiving. And he's a lovely man, and he came out here to do an afternoon. They showed the movie, and then he did a talk.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew this story that I'm about to tell you, and he said, Jessica, will you tell everybody the story? And I had noticed, if you notice, in the movie Casablanca, that my father smokes through the whole thing, and he never inhales. He's just puffing away. You know, pulls the smoke in and spits it out, and he never inhales. And so when I was, and he also smoked that way. There was a period of time when he smoked cigarettes at home. And I said to him when I was much older, why is it that you never inhaled? And he said, I didn't know how. What?
Dad.
Oh,
so you told me you went to some Casablanca thing the other day. What was that? Someone's writing a new... Is that
no,
the guy that,
that
was writing?
Thing.
Oh.
That was with Noah Eisenberg.
Ah,
and
so you...
I don't know who brought him here. It was the talk, the showing of the film and the talk was at a synagogue because his talk was about how there were a lot of Jewish immigrants in the film playing extras. They had in the film of Casablanca.
Yeah, and also the woman who sang the song. My friend told me the backstory of that, and you know that she had gotten out as well, and that it you know brings tears to the. I think it was like TCM, like what's his name?
Yeah,
Robert Osborne brought that up.
Right.
That's a great story. You know, and I think they were the best. You know, I'm glad that they ended up, no Ilsa, no this, Paul Hemroyd is gone. It's your father and Bogey. I thought that was a perfect ending.
Right.
I just loved it. So, Rachel, so I was telling you, Jennifer, oh, that was your name, Jennifer, I'm sorry. I was going to ask you.
When I was born, I was Jennifer. And then I got married when I was 22, and we lived in Europe for 2 years.
Wow,
and
cool.
I was with a British rep company doing plays. And then I was with a French acting company, and we didn't do anything but sit around at a cafe and talk about what we were going to do, and we never did anything. It was very French. And then we came back to this country, and I started getting jobs in the theater. Not acting jobs. I was sewing costumes. Mm-hmm. I was silk screening fabrics. I was stage managing. I was doing anything I could get. And then I finally got the understudy in a play. And it was directed by Albert Dekker, oddly enough, who was the father of my friend
Jen.
One
of your pals, yeah.
Who jumped out as an imp with me. And the play was about to close. I never went on. I never got to play the part. I knew it. We had rehearsals every week. But the girl never got sick, so I never went on. And Albert Dekker said to me, "Jessica, do you want to get your equity card?" And I said, "Yes, but I can't because I haven't been on stage in this play." And he said, "I'll lie." So he
my kind
made
of guy.
A contract. So he made a contract between us, and I took it to Actors Equity to join. And they said, "You can't be Jennifer Raines." And I said, "Why not?" And they said, "There is another Jennifer Raines. She's an English actress. She's in Hollywood. But we can't have two people with the same name. So you have 3 days, and you better pick another name." So I went home, and I called my mother, and I said, "So if you didn't name me Jennifer, what would you have named me?" And she said, "Call your father." They weren't, obviously weren't together at the time. So
yeah.
I called him, and I said, what would you have named me?" And he said, "Well, maybe." He said, "A name, what did he say? A name like Raines." Oh, he said, "Are you going to keep Raines?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "A name like Raines must have a first name with either 3 or 4 syllables because it sounds better."
Elizabeth, yeah, Anne Raines. Well, he was
Nicola
Claude Raines.
Whatever. So he, and one of those names that he gave me was Jessica. And so I thought, well, that's a good one. I like that one. So then I called my mother back, and I said, "He says Jessica Raines." And she said, "I want you to call my friend who does the tarot cards."
To see if it's okay.
Yeah, to see if it's okay. So I did, and she did the name Jessica Raines on the tarot cards, and it turned out very nicely. And so I went back to Actors Equity, and that became my name, and I did it wholeheartedly. I mean, I said, I don't want anybody to call me Jennifer anymore. I'm changing my name. And everybody has to call me Jennifer.
How long did
Jessica.
That take you? How long did that take you
father,
to get it
no,
used to
I
it?
I did it pretty quick, but my father couldn't get it, and he kept calling me Jennifer Jessica.
Oh, that's cute, though.
He used both names. But everybody else, I have one friend who calls me Jessica except if we're in front of other people. And when we're in front of other people, he calls me Jennifer.
Why?
And I think that it's kind of because I think he wants people to know that he's known me longer than anybody
else. Oh, that's really dumb.
Yeah.
That's so stupid.
I don't care. What difference does it make, right?
Well, Jessica's a nice name. Jennifer's a nice name.
Right.
But I just want to tell you, I was telling you before we started taping, on YouTube, they have all these, like, really obscure, really funny movies, and there's a lot of 70s movies of the week and things like that. So I was watching this movie, Scream Pretty Peggy, last week. It was raining out, and that is starring Ted Bessel, John Boy Walton's ex-girlfriend, and Betty Davis.
It was television, wasn't it? Yes, it was,
but it's on YouTube now. Yes. Check it out. So all of a sudden, I'm looking at your IMDb, and it says...
Scream Pretty Peggy, one of those.
It's good. So I look at it and it says Jessica Raines, and I know exactly the part you played. So this today I went to my YouTube, put in that Scream
Mother,
and
right?
There you. No, you were the woman behind the scenes whenever he was trying to get the gig. They wanted to get a job, and you were like the job lady, and you're rolling your eyes, and I'm like, my God, she's got her daddy's eyes. And it was just, you did a good job. You had a little teeny-weeny part, but you did a good job with it. Congratulations.
You had a lot of teeny-weeny parts.
Yeah. It's funny that you did it with Betty, but I bet you never ran into her, right?
No, never.
Yeah. But it's a good movie. Check it out, everybody, if you want to see it. It's okay. Scream Pretty Peggy. You check for it on YouTube because you can see Jessica really fast. She's like within the first four minutes.
It's unbelievable what's on YouTube.
You can get everything on YouTube.
I mean, we did a roundtable discussion in Morocco at Rick's Cafe, which is... an incredible cafe that was built by a woman, which in Morocco is pretty amazing, an American woman.
Yeah.
And it's modeled after Rick's Cafe in the movie Casablanca. And one of the things that we did was a roundtable discussion there, and it's on YouTube. I mean, it's crazy.
Everything goes to YouTube. You can get, you know, the most from the funniest and the sweetest and great old cheesy movies to really grotesque things that people upload that I stay away from.
Right.
But it can be there. But check it out. You'll see. Show your daughters and your grandchildren. They'll love it. You were really cute. It was a cute couple of minutes, but you were very, very cute. And I said, ah, go girl. So what did your dad think? I did. What did your dad tell you when you told him you wanted to go into... acting?
It was not good. he was not happy, and the reason he wasn't happy was because he said there's a lot of disappointment, there's a lot of rejection, and you spend your days waiting for the phone to ring. And I guess that's true, but you learn to handle the rejection, because usually it's not because you gave a crappy audition. It's because you were too tall or too thin or too old or too young or, you know, they wanted a blonde, they wanted this, they wanted that. I mean, there are a thousand reasons why you don't get a part. And so that's an adjustment that I made, I guess, fairly quickly.
But he...
And I worked a lot. There was nothing big. I mean, I didn't actually ever star in a film.
But
I starred in a couple of television things. And
Mary Hartman, you were on, right?
I was on Mary Hartman.
I have to look that up.
I did some stuff in New York. I did with Charles Durning a play for television called The Dancing Bear. And then there was another one I was in for the same group about a Jewish girl who goes to the city from a small town and has success in a job, and she comes home to her very ethnic, old-school family, and she comes home with her new values and her new life, and she just doesn't fit in at all.
And that was
and
for
don't
TV?
Remember the name. And that was me, yeah. And that was for TV.
Shirts and Skins.
Class of 63. Oh, Shirts and Skins.
The Summer Without Boys.
Television. Summer Without Boys. That was television.
Sarah T., you played the mother, right? Portrait of a Teenage Alcoholic.
Yes.
With, what's her face? Linda Blair, Exorcist Girl. You did a lot of stuff. You did Mary Hartman, three episodes.
No, I did a lot. Mm-hmm. I worked. And I did, like, 50 commercials. I mean, commercials are a big thing for an actor to get.
I know. Are you kidding? They can pay your rent.
It pays very well.
Very
well.
You know,
you go to work for a day, and then you just keep getting checks. And it's wonderful because, you know, it makes up for all those times when you're not working.
You know, it's great. I know everybody I know in the business, if they get a commercial, it's like, wow, can we touch you?
Right.
It's like really cool.
And yeah. I did a lot of theater. Three seasons of Summer's Doc, and that was all from the East Coast. That was all from New York.
So what did your father say when you just sort of said, tough dad, this is what I want to do? Did he accept it for you? Did he give you advice?
Oh, no, he was terrific. Mm-hmm. He said to me, I think you need to study with some reputable people, and I'm going to call Mildred Dunnock, and I'm going to ask her who you should study with. So he called Mildred Dunnock, who was a well-known actress and a friend of his, and he said, who should my daughter go to in New York? And she said she should be with Uta Hagen. Do you know who she is?
Sure. She was in the...
Uta Hagen was married to Herbert Berghoff, and they had a
HB
studio.
HB Studios. I went there myself, yeah. Jessica, when I first moved to New York.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yep.
And she was a terrific teacher. And then I went from her to Bill Ball, who was a classic acting teacher and taught Shakespeare, which I was just terrible at.
Yes. And it's not everybody's forte.
No. Studied with Alan Miller, who in New York, who ended up out here. And then from there with Lee Strasberg.
The guy who stands up.
Was,
the yes, stand-up
and
man.
And that was quite an experience, yeah.
How'd you like that, the method acting bit?
I loved it. I mean, it was amazing. And I was in an elevator with him, with Lee, on my way to a class. And I can't remember what the question was, but something about method acting and when did you use it or when should you use it. And he said to me, you use it when you're in trouble. And I thought that was interesting. If you're having trouble with a part or trouble with an idea or trouble with a concept, you pull that stuff out and get through it with that.
How long did you study with him?
4 years.
Wowee. So you were in New York quite a while.
And I'll tell you something interesting. Dustin Hoffman, who was a friend, sat in the back of the room with Lee, and we were all fighting to get our scenes done and our sense memories done and our
sense
exercises
memories.
Done.
Yeah.
And Dustin Hoffman sat in the back row and read the newspaper for 4 years.
That's so fun. Well, how
never
come he stayed? Why?
Never did it. Because I guess he was just absorbing it by being there.
Oh, just getting everybody else's stuff going on.
Yeah.
So he became your friend?
Yeah. Well, we were acquaintances.
Yeah, you knew him for 4 years.
Not close friends.
I've got to ask you, when you decided to go into the business, you know how people are, oh, that's Claude Rains' daughter, blah, 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 blah. Was there any of that
you
heard?
Nobody knew.
Oh, really?
I never told anybody.
Hmm. Good.
And people didn't ask. I mean, if somebody asked, I mean, I didn't deny it.
Yeah.
But I didn't offer up the information.
No, that's good.
I just needed to do it
for yourself.
By myself,
yes.
On my own terms, and certainly not to be compared to him, who was brilliant.
Exactly.
And I just think it's awful.
I
mean, you know, I was a good actress, but I was not brilliant, and I didn't want to be compared to him.
Who can blame you?
But he would come and see me do things. he would come to the strangest places. He came, I did a play, a number of plays, at an experimental theater called La Mama ETC in New York, mm-hmm. on the Lower East Side. And it was a second floor, it was a loft and a second floor walk-up. And it had a reputation because Ellen Stewart, who ran the theater, had very bizarre tastes, and we did very kooky stuff. And my father came to see me do a play, and when it was over, all he said to me was, "This place is a fire trap."
Thanks, Dad. Oh, my God.
Okay.
What did you say? You must have just been like,
I don't remember what I said.
That's tough. That was tough. Yeah, well, a lot of those places were, but geez, Dad. So
right.
your
right.
mother left your father when you were 17, correct?
Yes.
And mm-hmm. you were living in Pennsylvania, or were you in New Hampshire at the
yes.
time?
Yes.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
And so she said, "Do you want to come with me?" And you said, "No. I don't want to go with you."
Yes.
And yeah. so,
well, listen, it was during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my way to my first year at college.
Where'd you go, Bennington?
I had a boyfriend. I had a car.
You had a life.
I lived on this farm. I had a life, and I didn't want to leave that for the month that was left or so before I went to college.
I don't blame you. And your mother also, she fell in love with somebody else. She left your father.
She fell in love with a man that I introduced her to.
Oh, my.
Not on purpose.
Yeah.
It was an accident.
Did you like him?
Yeah, I did. But it was weird.
I can imagine.
You know, it was weird. And then my father married two more people after my mother.
The one was only a year, right? Who was she? She was,
Aki Yampour was a very talented pianist whose forte was, playing Bach on the harpsichord. And she was extraordinary. She was born in Europe. She had been in a concentration camp.
Yikes.
She had a hell of a background. And they were married for a very short period of time. And I loved her. She was terrific.
You liked her a lot. No problems at all.
Yeah. And then the next one was Rosemary Schroeder.
I read about that.
Yeah, at the door and said to my father, "I'm an author and I want to write a book about you." It turns out that she'd never written anything,
mm-hmm.
but he fell in love and they got married.
He was very flattered by her. Didn't she say she moved specifically there to marry Claude
yes.
Rains?
Yes.
Do you think she meant that?
Yes. She was not my favorite person.
Yeah, she didn't sound so great. I remember her bragging to you weren't like, you guys were in a cab, and she was saying, "This is the invisible man. This is the invisible man."
Yeah, that was in Italy. Good. Yeah.
But she did come to a horrible death, and it seemed like your father truly loved her.
Well, I think more after the fact.
Oh, after she died?
There were problems. Well, he complained to me
mm-hmm.
Because she thought, I think, that she was going to marry a man and they were going to live this wild, an actor.
Movie star.
And she was going to, yeah. They were going to live this movie star life, and she was going to wear wonderful clothes and go to galas, and my father didn't do that.
And she was 30 years younger as well, right?
Yes. And I think she was disappointed. She never said that to me, but he said that she was disappointed. But that he just could not change. I mean, he was in his, 70s by that time?
Yeah, he must have been, right?
I don't know what. What?
How old was he when he died, 77?
He was 77.
Yes, I'm sure he must have been either late.
Yeah.
They were only together 3 years because she had a horrific death of pancreatic cancer. What a
terrible
way to die. So
yeah.
That must have been very difficult for your dad. And I read somewhere that she sent him this pink letter and that he pinned it to her pillow. Is that true? That was in the book.
I don't know. If it was in the book, I don't remember.
Do you, on these Casablanca jaunts, do you ever run into Stephen Bogart?
Yeah, I met him in Key Largo because he lives near there.
I like him.
Yeah, he's a lovely man. He really is. And we had a nice time together. It was fun.
Yeah. You know,
The Key Largo Festival was terrific.
Is that the one where they... Yeah.
That's the first one that I ever did. No, actually, I did one before that many 20 years ago.
Wow. He's been doing it that long? Ouch.
No, not Stephen. Uh-huh. I did one 20 years ago.
Oh.
Which I'll tell you about in a minute. But the one in Key Largo is really terrific. It's very well managed. They keep you very busy doing roundtable discussions and talks. And they show movies on a big outdoor screen, all of the Humphrey Bogart movies. And we had a good time. I mean,
It sounds like fun.
It was good. It was fun. It was 4 days. And I went off and what's the boat?
Santana.
What's the boat? The African Queen is
there.
The real African Queen.
Yeah, my friend took his dad on that. Yeah, they had a blast.
They brought it there from Africa. They brought it in. They built a big box. And somebody opened the box and stole the motor, so they had to get a new motor when it hit Key Largo.
How's
but
it look?
It's there, and you can. It was fun. It's very small. I think there were 7 of us on the boat, and we were out in the ocean for about an hour and a half. It was thrilling. It really was.
And I know they do it. I know because I interviewed Eddie Muller. He used to go down there and host or something. I think Ileana Douglas. There was some. I don't know if it's the same thing.
She was there when we were there.
Was doing it this year. Eddie Muller did it before. And I saw an interview with Stephen Bogart. I think for him, because I read his book as well, I think it's harder for a guy, and especially Humphrey Bogart's son, to kind of come out of that without everybody going, hey, that's Humphrey Bogart's son, that's Humphrey Bogart. You know what I mean? I think it must have been much harder for him.
Well, I think now he's enjoying it.
He's come to peace with it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the feeling that I got.
Good. Because
he's married to a lovely woman. Mm-hmm. It's a fairly new marriage, I think 3 years. And we just all, and Monica Henry was there, and we just had a really good time.
That's nice. So you haven't been there for a while. You don't do it every year.
No, this is the first time. They asked me to do it, not this last year, but the year before, and I said no. I said, I can't do this. You know, I can't.
Keep talking about this stuff.
I can't keep talking about it, and I can't, and I'm not interested, and so forth and so on. And then the guy who runs it, Robert de Klerk, he runs it with Stephen Bogart. Uh-huh. Well, Robert does all the running. Stephen is there, but
yes.
I don't know how much he's actually involved. And so Robert asked me again. And I said, and Robert had done me a huge favor that had to do with a clip, the end clip from Casablanca, which was used for a commercial. And he tracked me down and told the people who were doing the commercial about me and so forth and so on. And it ended up being monetarily very pleasant. So I thought, okay, I really owe this to Robert de Klerk. So I said, okay. I would go down there and do this, and I did, and I just had a terrific time. They put us up in a very nice resort, and you're fed and taken care of, and it's just, it's really nice.
I bet, and it's good seeing those people that you're friends with, Monica Henry. Wasn't she in the, she acted herself a little bit, didn't she?
I don't think much.
Did she have a sister?
She had a sister who was a ranked tennis player.
Ah.
That's really all I know. I think her name is Mimi, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. So your dad, he moved to New Hampshire. You were living in New York, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And he died. At 77, mm-hmm. he had what? He had sort of a, do you think it, from cirrhosis or something?
Liver, yes. Yes, liver stuff. Too much drinking.
Was it just like, well, yeah. You know, most actors and actresses in those days were big-time boozers. I mean, that's just the way it was. So were you shocked when he died? Was it a surprise?
No, I was there. I mean, I was, he got sick, and he was in the hospital in Laconia, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he called me or the doctor called me. I can't remember. And I went up and spent a couple of days there. And then he said to me, okay, you can go home. I'm going to be fine. And I went back to New York. And then a couple of days later, the doctor called me and said, he's not going to last the night. And I said, I don't know what to do. It's really hard to get there. Because the planes weren't flying because of the weather and so forth and so on. And he said to me, he wouldn't know you if you came, if he saw you. So then by the next morning, he had passed away.
And you...
I went up.
Uh-huh.
And and there was a... I went to the house, and the lawyer was there. And... Rosemary's children were there. And I don't know, the house was sort of filled with people. And then a woman, there was a knock at the door, and I answered the door, and there was a woman standing there. And she said to me, my name is, I don't remember her name. And she said, I have a favor to ask you. And I said, yes. She said, your father's nightshirts are in the bottom drawer of the chest upstairs, and I would like to have one. I said, what? And I went and got the lawyer, and I said, what do I do? And he said, give her the nightshirt. What do you care?
Well, your father was a romantic, I guess. That's what we call it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well,
I guess so.
So you gave her a nightshirt.
I gave her one, yeah.
And then you continued your acting career. And I noticed the father of your children and grandchildren. I know him. He is Rick Lenz.
Yes.
Where'd you guys meet? You were on Butterflies Are Free. Is that it?
No, we met in Buffalo, New York, in a play. In You Can't Take It With You, which actually my father flew up from New Hampshire to see.
Did he like it? Or did he think it was a fire trap?
No. This was not a fire trap.
Good.
This was a fabulous theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's where we met.
And did he like your play?
I can't remember. Huh. I really can't remember.
Did he like Rick?
It was a terrific. I can't remember. And I really don't remember. But I know that Rick and I, when after we were married, went to see my father. And my father, we were with another actor whose name I can't remember. And we were sitting in the living room. And my father was telling them stories, which he did very well. But I'd heard them all.
I know.
Times.
It's like being a wife.
What?
It's like, you know, a wife or a daughter. Anybody, you hear the story again.
Yeah,
it's like,
I wasn't so interested in hearing them again. And I got up and went for a walk in the middle of this afternoon where my father was telling stories because I just didn't want to hear them anymore, you know, about... my father and the New York stage and the films and I don't know, whatever he was.
And they were enthralled, I'm sure.
Right.
Because I had never heard it before. You'd heard it like 45 times, probably.
Right, right.
I don't blame you.
Right.
So you have three children? And you have grandchildren.
I have one.
Oh, you have one child.
I have one child with Rick, and one grandchild.
Ah. Are they the ones who go to go with you when you travel? Does your daughter go with you when you travel?
No.
Oh.
She came once. I flew. She came once to the south of France. Jack and I, my partner. We've been together for 40 years.
Oh,
how
nice. How nice.
And we rented a house in the south of France, which was wonderful, overlooking the Mediterranean.
Oh, how nice that
must
have been.
Incredible. And they came over when my granddaughter was two. But generally, no, she doesn't travel with me. She's not so interested.
So it's good. You have a partner who's right there for you. And you never wanted to get married again, huh?
No.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, I was married twice. Mm-hmm. And then enough already.
Yeah. I'm divorced, and I have no desire to get married again either. So, you know, what the heck?
Right.
You know, I don't.
Right.
Enough is enough. You know?
Right.
Love is
exactly.
good.
Exactly. That's what I say.
That's how I feel. Anyway, Jessica, you are a delight, and I love how kind you were and answering me, because I'm sure it's like, oh, I got to talk about my father. Do I want to do it? But you did. You were so...
Well, I had to call my daughter, and this is embarrassing. I had to call my daughter and ask her what a podcast was.
Well, you shouldn't feel so embarrassed, because I do a woman's podcast, and my podcasting partner, when I first asked her, come on, said, what's a podcast? And she's 35, so don't feel bad. People don't know.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people don't know. So, no, it's not a big deal. And you are fabulous. Just like one good thing about podcasts, it's not live. You edit, you put the music to it, and then people...
Well, I said to Abigail, to my daughter, I said, do they see your face? And she said, no, it's like radio. And I said, oh, thank God, I don't have to put my lipstick on.
Never, please. I'm sitting here, I'm wearing a flannel shirt, I have my glasses on, and... I no makeup. That's a way to do it. You just, so you're all relaxed, get it over with. Because people get, you know, it's not comfortable if you have to get all dolled up and do all this other stuff. It's no fun. I think it makes the interview a lot more comfortable and it flows better. And that's what I like about it. And also people can keep listening and listening. And that's what happens when they discover a podcast. Then they go, oh, that one was on it too. So let me listen to this again. So this will be listened to for a long time. And you were fabulous. And I want to thank you so much.
You're adorable. Thank you so much.
And you are a total adorable lady. And I really appreciate you coming on. You are the sweetest ever. People watch Scream Pretty Peggy and look for her. She's in like the first 4 minutes or 5 minutes when they're asking for jobs. And she rolls her eyes like you never believe. She should have gotten a Roll the Eye Emmy. It was perfect.
Roll the IME. Okay.
Okay. So thank you so much, Jessica.
You.
I'm going to let you know when it comes out. Okay?
Okay.
You're a darling.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Wasn't she a doll, everybody? I love her. I contacted her, and she was so kind to get in touch with me. And, you know, you talk about your father, you talk about it, you get it. You know, it happens a lot of times. But she is lovely, and I want to thank Jessica because she is really, really a sweetie. My communications with her have been just nothing but really sweet. She's a doll. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. And we will be back on soon. I'll be posting another one very soon, True Tales of Tinseltown. Please go to my Facebook page and follow us. And also my website's going up and we're on Podbean and we will be on YouTube and we will also be on iTunes. So thanks, everybody. Take care. Bye.
You must remember this, a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh. sentimental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you, on that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. And love songs are never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy, and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate that no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by. And love songs are never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy, and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have its mate that no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time.